No,
we were going to do some plugs.
Indeed. What did you want to plug?
I wanted to plug Do Go On, the quiz show, which is available on Stupid Old Channel. I have been on a recent episode, and Alistair, I believe you are on a forthcoming episode, or maybe even a fifth coming episode.
It could be. It could be a third coming. you know what? I actually thought of a joke about that. A Pokemon that's called Gyarados. And I was recently saying it'd be great if when it evolved, it became Gyaratrace.
Really good joke. And also, I may have already mentioned this, but I was on a recent episode of the podcast The Gargle, talking about news and current events. And that was fun
as
well.
And I listened, and you were being very funny, Andy.
Thank you, Alistair. All right, let's try and do that again, but on our podcast. Hello, and welcome to Two in the Think Tank, the show where we come up with five sketch ideas.
I'm Alistair George William Trombley Birchall.
And I'm Andy. And we are coming to you alive from both sides of the globe simultaneously. I think, statistically speaking, this podcast is taking place inside the liquid molten core of Earth itself.
On average, this is the hottest podcast in town.
The pressure under which it takes place is not only enormous in the sense of we only have a small window of opportunity before our children start screaming at us, but also the vast crushing pressure of the weight of the earth. Not just the weight of parenting responsibility, but the entire...
But even that is
mantle.
Relatively crushing. You know, I feel like a submersible trying to visit the Titanic sometimes, where the smallest dent and I collapse in on myself and into a bloody mist.
Yes. It's a very unstable point of equilibrium or whatever that we exist at. And yes, the tiniest rupture in the fragile outer shell.
Now, Andy, I've maybe mentioned to you, you know, I'm always talking about podcast ideas and it upsets you. Podcast ideas that I want to do by myself and things like that, that I would love to have you involved, but I couldn't possibly put you under any more pressure in your life, obviously.
Indeed.
And I feel like this one, maybe you wouldn't want to be involved, but this is an idea, and maybe I've brought this to you, but the idea is topical erotic fan fiction. And what I do is I open up the news.
This,
and I look
we
for
are
a
bringing
story?
You some of the most breaking boners.
Absolutely. breaking boners, and breaking wide-ons. And then you look up, you go to the news, and you say, it says here, oh, David Beckham is suing actor Mark Wahlberg. And then you read out the story. You say the football star has launched a multi-million-dollar lawsuit against a very famous Hollywood actor after a deal went sour, right? And then, you know, you kind of read the rest of the story.
Yeah,
and then
really
you begin,
good.
And then you start, you know, describing how that could maybe lead to intercourse.
Yes, of course. You know? Well, Alistair, though, but to me, that doesn't feel like your purest version of this idea. I feel like if it was to be... And I'm sorry to tell you your business. And I'm sorry to tell you how to go full Alistair. But for me, going full Alistair, the story would have to be something about an attempt to refloat a collapsed pontoon bridge off the coast of Portugal. Right.
Yeah.
And there'd be almost no people involved in the story at all. There'd be... a large inanimate object. There'd be maybe an abstract concept, and you would be trying to extract the maximum erotic potential.
Sure.
Out of
you know,
out
I mean,
that.
You know, the I don't know, the expansion of the, you know, the pontoons, you know, buoyant floaties, as they pucker up and more.
Now, Alistair,
kind of commitment you can expect from this kind of podcast.
I'm sorry to take us to this place so early the podcast, but imagine if we'd got to the top of Mount Everest. Hillary and Tenzing get to the top of Mount Everest, and right there on the very top,
lock her up.
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, Hillary? Is that Hillary? Sir Edmund Hillary Clinton? Is that the character you're referring to?
Sir Edmund Hillary and Tenzing Norgay has started listening to, podcasts of Donald Trump. He just can't help himself.
Alistair, so you get to the top of Mount Everest, and on the very peak, we find that the Earth has a clitoris, right? The Earth's clitoris is right at the top of Mount Everest. Now,
like it is on a woman, at the very top of her head. I mean, it makes sense. I'm 100% in.
Yeah, great. And then we as a society have to decide, as humanity, decide what we do about it, whether or not we rub it and try.
It would be crazy if we discovered that some of the problems with the weather and things like that have been since people have been climbing on it, and that it's because the Earth has been having like gushing orgasms.
Or it might not have reached the climax. So I think probably what we would need, it's getting hot, it's getting wet, you know, all those sorts of things. But we haven't
hot and wet.
Managed to get it there yet to its ultimate destination. And that's what we have to do in order to reset the climate, you know.
Absolutely. So so that then it can finally cool down. But first there will be like intense blowing winds. You know, as we get closer, there will be shivering, earthquakes, and of course, in rare instances, buckets and buckets of escaping fluid.
Really good. Yes. Have I already suggested this on the podcast that we start to make the claim that there is no such thing as male ejaculation?
And I like that a lot. Yeah, and it's actually just piss.
It's just piss.
We just think it's piss. And the guys are just very dehydrated. That's why it looks like that.
That's what it is.
It's have a fucking drink, fellas. Aye. Would it hurt you to hydrate something in your body? And that's supposed to be moisturize something, you know, because, you know, guys apparently don't moisturize very much, which I don't.
Well, we need to come up with masculine way to refer to it, like they did with power naps, like when they rebranded the Nana Nap to the power nap so that men wouldn't think it was girly to have a little sleep, right? Mm. We need to come up with a new way to refer to moisturizing your skin so that it sounds like something a man would do. I'm not moisturizing my skin. I am
velocirizing.
Ooh, so that I'm more slippery and I can move through life more powerfully.
Exactly. I mean, like, you know, I think it's almost like a form of aerodynamicing.
It is, isn't it?
You know, because you are becoming less, less friction-y.
It would be great to invent a lubricant so slippery.
That would be great. Okay.
That when you coat your body with it, you can actually slip through the earth. You can slide down into the ground
like
with no effort.
Like in between the sand grains and things like that. Like you become,
your body just pushes them out of the way because you're so slippery. Because the thing that stops you going in, falling into the earth, is actually friction. It's those resistive forces between you and the ground. But like,
it would be crazy if like all you had to do was like point your toes and stand like a ballerina, and you would just start falling in. And so when you're teaching kids to walk, you're like, and remember,
don't
keep your feet flat or the earth will swallow you.
I mean, it's a good idea. Yeah. We invent the Vanta Black of lubricants.
Oh, yes. Nothing can escape.
We call it Vanta Slip. Oh, Vanta
Slip. Slag?
Slurp?
But that's like, the Vanta slag is when somebody becomes such a slag, like the purest form of a slag.
Yes. Go on. It's been so long since slag has been part of the lexicon. Yeah. I've lost touch with what it truly means.
I mean, I guess, like, let's feel it out.
All right, so slag. Is it somebody who's promiscuous? Is it like slut?
I think it's, like, more, like, rough and abusive. Kind of, you know, like, a bit, you know, more impolite.
You slag. Yeah, I'm trying to...
You know, it's probably... You probably would aim it more at poor people, but I could picture a rich slag.
But also, Australia's I don't want anyone richest to think... slag. It's a great reality TV show.
I can see the headline on news.com.au already. I think this is two mentions of news.com.au I've made today already. I just love it. I just love Murdoch newspapers.
Slag.
I
think we should try and bring it back.
What was the idea? The Vanta? Oh, yeah. Slipping. Oh, yeah. Lubricant that allows you to slip through the earth.
I mean, what would you do with it if you had such a thing? It would almost become like a superpower, because I imagine it would allow you to sort of walk through walls. You know, you could sort of swim through the earth and swim up under a bank vault or something like that.
Imagine that. It allows you to slip in between atoms.
And it really makes that sound every single time.
Yeah, and you would feel like... I think you would feel the magnetic force on your face as you go through.
Mm. Well, you become immune to friction. I think that's the main thing about this lubricant. Really, what would be great is you would want to apply it only to sort of one side of your body, right? Like, you'd only want to put it on, like, say, if you wanted to swim through the earth, you need to apply it only to like your upper body, so that you can still push with your legs to push you through, but you're forcing your head in that way. And then maybe, though, like if you were wanted to say escape from the cops, you would smear it all the way down the front of your body. Then you can just run, get up a bit of a speed, and then dive face first onto the ground and slide along like a penguin.
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be pretty terrifying once you're inside the earth and you can't breathe. Also, you wouldn't... Firstly, I think it would have to work like one of those epoxies where you know, it's like two tubes next to each other. And they mix together. Because how would you keep it inside of a tube?
Exactly. That's a really good point.
Right? Yep. And also, you wouldn't use it for sex because you would just pass through your partner. Even as you're rubbing it on to yourself... Your hand would start going through your own body.
Oh, it's quite horrible.
You know?
Yeah, it's almost a curse, isn't it?
Oh, exactly. I mean, I assume you're not hurting anybody by passing through them. I assume it's like two galaxies passing through each other, and that hopefully none of our atoms collide.
Infinitely slippery. Well, I think statistically speaking, maybe they wouldn't, you know, because there is, as we know from watching Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, there is so much empty space inside.
And Ant-Man. Do you think Ant-Man basically stole ideas directly from Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
It's my suspicion that Ant-Man may have predated Honey,
the actual original Ant-Man. So maybe Honey, I Shrunk the Kids stole from Ant-Man. Because it was, you know, it was a silly comedy idea, right? And I guess it would have been from the SCTV guys, or because if Rick Moranis was involved,
yeah.
But that's still Lorne Michaels, I think. I think Lorne Michaels was SCTV as well, wasn't he?
I don't know. Is that is that because Lorne was originally a sketch performer himself? Is that right? He was a
Yeah, well, I know he was at least involved because it's a Canadian thing, right? Mm. I don't think I can solve this for us right now. Maybe he tried to create Saturday Night Live as a inspired by SCTV or something like that. I just can't, even though I'm looking at the Wikipedia right now, I can't.
I reckon take in any much,
information and keep this entertaining. Yeah.
Yes, I mean that's a struggle enough. On its own, Alistair.
It's a struggle often. Enough even having to have read something.
Indeed. Without having to be interesting at the same time.
Exactly.
All right, Alistair. Now, you've heard of interpretive dance, right?
Yeah. What about male cleavage? Have we brought up... have I talked to you about male cleavage recently?
You've heard of interpretive dance, but what about male cleavage?
Cause like,
well, obviously we've got to call it the heavage, right? For a start, so that men feel good about it.
Okay? Absolutely. But
we're reclaiming it.
But I think that it needs to not, like, because you get the pecs that get a form of cleavage and they get a low-cut top with that. But
yep.
But I think it needs to be, like... It's the owning of the sort of the sloppier male tit, you know, like the just, you know, and they get pushed up a bit, could be with tape, could be with whatever, but just getting to move them together and, you know, and I think probably, look, this is not, it's going to be yucky in its intentions, but I think it's going to be because it's going to be, this movement is initially going to come from people wanting to get more views on their Instagram reels or their TikToks.
Right? So men wanting to have more cleavage.
Because where a little bit of cleavage is showing on anything gets a multiple more views than something that doesn't.
It is true, isn't it? It's a... it's almost like a sort of a cheat code for social media, you know. Whatever the codes were in Warcraft or Starcraft that would allow you to just instantly get a certain number more gold or whatever it was. It's like that, but for attention, clicks, eyeballs, you.
Exactly, yeah. Which, you know, eyeballs are the gold or, you know, oil of the of that world. It's funny. It's great to hear you talk about StarCraft because, you know, we all know that you've obviously created a Bush poem about StarCraft, but it's so rare we get to hear you, you know, go back and reference that cultural touchstone that is now becoming quite aged.
Well, it's still the most recent thing that I know of. Yeah. Still the most recent, the last time I was, it's like I've pushed off from the end of a swimming pool and I've been swimming underwater for a long time without taking a breath or kicking. And just using that initial momentum that I got from pushing off from that touchstone that was StarCraft. And I'm really, that momentum is really running pretty low. And I am going to have to come up for air or die very soon.
Sure. Well, but, you know, I think both are on the table.
But I think we need to think about what a male cleavage, what its appeal would be. I think... something would be is that it would probably have to be quite hairy, the male cleavage.
I think so. There's a sort of possibility of being that.
It might not be as deep as, say, a woman's version.
Well, no, but we're not trying to have woman's cleavage.
Well,
we're trying
to have
man's cleavage, you know?
Yes. So that's what I'm trying to quantify. What would be the KPIs, the key performance indicators of a male cleavage?
Well, and I think
hairiness, yeah, and that sort of darkness that you get from the hairiness, right? It's like when you look into a wood, all right, a forested area, and it gets, yeah, dark very quickly in that dense, thickety undergrowth. That's sure what a man can bring to a cleavage that a woman could rarely hope to achieve on the same level.
Sure, yeah, it's got that kind of werewolf vibe, you know that.
Yeah,
but it's not all going to be that, you know. Like, you know, you got to picture people from everywhere doing this, all types of people, and I think we're going to find, you know, I think it's just a new element of fashion that helps diversify the male wardrobe a little bit more.
Well, I think what's fascinating
think about the boob tube.
I'm thinking about the boob tube. Yes.
Now picture it on. Amen.
Yes. Okay.
There you go. Now, but picture it lower cut.
Ah. Yeah.
Now, okay, picture it even lower cut.
Oh, my goodness.
But I think it's got to be, the part of it is that it will still, I think the men will hope, trigger that same thing in people that is sending them back to, you know, birth, what they're looking for is that shadow. There's something about that little shadow line that makes you, you know, do you remember when your children were born? I don't know if you would remember this kind of thing. You probably haven't. It's not something you've experienced that much. Right? A child being born. But when they're born and the first thing that they can do is, like, essentially the only thing they can do is kind of push with their legs, and it kind of is to push them up towards a boob.
Wow. Yeah, right.
You know, and
that's that one of their few built-in factory standard features, and the rest you have to sort of download into them. But that
absolutely
comes,
yeah,
and you get that for free, that little leg push.
That's a freebie. But the next taste you got to pay for.
That's a little something to get you started.
Yeah. We'll give you the leg push, but if you want to be able to do arm curls.
The rest is, that's on the
we'll give you
free
squats
model. But the rest is, I mean, that's life, isn't it, really? Life is like one of those freemium, it's like an app that you download, and you're like, oh, there's a free version. You download it, but then the version of life that you get, you can only really push with your legs and suck.
Yeah,
and then if
and
you
the only thing
do
you can eat is breast milk.
Exactly. You're like,
and then
oh,
like, but if you
want
to experience all the flavors of life, well, you gotta like, you know, have somebody pay to take care of you. And
yes, if you want to unlock all of those extra features. And but, you know, if it was up to me, I would spend a long time just trying to see how long I could get away with just pushing.
Well, that's right. Because, I mean, think about it. If you, let's say you didn't make it to a boob, let's say you were just pushing along the ground, you know, and eventually you would encounter things that you could try to eat.
You could suck on. I think, I mean, it would be great to have people who've made it all the way to adulthood refusing to engage with this capitalistic framework of existence that insists that we must gain
use
more,
our
that
arms,
we must do more, that we must use our arms, exactly, to upgrade, right? I'm not going to engage with that. All I do, I'm 47 years old, and I've never done anything more than push myself along with my legs and suck. And
just
I'm
letting everybody know that Andy isn't 47 years old. That was just him playing a character.
I was trying to imagine the most absurd age possible for
a man. I know, Andy, but we are aging so much that it is actually no longer beyond the realm of impossibility, that we could be 47.
Yeah. What was unimaginable.
So unimaginable.
The most absurd reaches of fiction.
I mean, even reaching 40 feels, it does feel absurd. It feels embarrassing.
It's still, it's weird because I'm still a young up-and-comer. I don't understand.
Me too. I'm still like, well, at some point, if obviously I'll be plucked out and I will, you know, be given the opportunity that allows me to feel security financially and all that kind of stuff. And go, oh, that's never coming.
Yeah, well, like, it's going to be... It's going to be weird for everybody when I suddenly get successful at 50, but it must happen at some point, so I guess it's going to have to happen then, or maybe at 60 I'll suddenly be, plucked from obscurity. Oh, well,
I guess. I'm going to get Dangerfielded.
Mm-hmm. Is that what happened with and Dangerfield, Rodney?
He was like, might have been 60 or something like that.
I mean, that gives us all hope, doesn't it?
Doesn't it? But, you know, Andy, I've had a lot of those guys in my mind over the years, and I keep flying past them.
Yes. It's okay. Yeah. Ricky Gervais didn't get The Office commissioned until he was 37. Oh, fuck.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, I remember hearing him say, well, nobody's funny until they're 30. I go, well, I'm not 30 yet, so I don't have to expect to be funny yet. That's exciting. And then I kind of flew past that, and then it's like... Oh, Flight of the Conchords, they popped late. They were like 35, past that.
But isn't it interesting? It feels like Ricky also sort of slid into irrelevance relatively early on as well. So he really was a last in, first out kind of a guy. Like, I feel like I couldn't give a shit about anything he's doing.
Andy, I think that this is just a StarCraft kind of situation where
I was hoping
you just don't realize how huge he continues to be.
Sure.
My mom loves watching videos of his all the time.
Really?
Your mum? Yeah.
But he's quite puts his sort of rational, atheistic kind of thing really
center.
And your mum, she likes to dabble, I would say, in a little bit of the woo-woo.
Sure, but he also likes to just be like, oh, you should be able to say mean things, you know? And people shouldn't get offended. And I think there's just something in our parents' generation where I think, and, you know, obviously I don't want to drag your parents into this, but where they might be like, well, we should be. And so it's almost like enjoying it. You know, like how sometimes it feels like people enjoy political comedy just because they agree with it and it's not necessarily because it's that funny.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and that's always what I think made me feel a little bit yuck about stuff. Like anytime you make a point, it always feels like you should be making a point that people don't agree with.
Yes. So,
and as a way of getting a pure laugh.
yeah.
But anyway. But obviously that's not how you build, you know, Gervais numbers. Of audience size. Because, you know, he released all those other ones about, you know, he released that show about his wife dying or a wife dying. Somebody's wife died. I never saw Derek. I never saw, you know, I didn't really see the one about the short guy.
Yeah, yeah. Life's Too Short.
Yeah. Great title.
Very clever. But...
Was the guy dying? Is that what it was? Was he dying as well?
I don't know. I think he was just
because, I mean,
short.
Then it would make sense.
Yeah.
But if he wasn't making sense, then it's just like a, you've added the word short in there.
Yeah. Yeah, you could have called it anything, right? You could have called it short pants or a short...
Short longs.
Short black... coffee, thank you. Could have been the name of the thing. It's just got the word short. Anything with the word short in it.
Exactly. Now, of course, you know, I could be missing the main point, but I think the whole point of that show was just to get Liam Neeson to say something fucked, right?
And
is that in that show as well?
That's an achievement in and of itself.
Yeah, that's
I think
a good achievement.
Yeah.
But then he started to go out and say fucked up things even without being on a show. And then they were like, oh, we should have got that on film. Could have said it was ironic. So now look, okay, so last thing I've written down is male cleavage. I apologize.
No, but that also feels like you were quite resistant to hearing any of my ideas about male cleavage, Alistair.
Sorry, Andy. Can I hear it? I want to hear it now. I apologize.
Well, I was just trying to drill down into this idea of that sort of, that that darkness within the cleavage that comes from having that hair. Because I think with a womanly or a breastal cleavage, it is the darkness is a signifier of the sort of, I guess, the size of the boobs, and that sort of your mind makes an inference, between the relationship between that darkness and the size, and then presumably that's what.
Summer's just around the corner, so give your body the care it deserves with Osea's best-selling Andaria Algae Body Oil. Created by infusing Andaria seaweed in barrels of botanical oils, it leaves skin silky soft and glowing. Plus, it's clinically proven to improve elasticity and deeply moisturize without feeling greasy. It's safe, clean, vegan skincare. Get 10% off your first order at OseaMalibu.com with code GLOW, plus free shipping on orders over $60.
Triggers a part of your brain that thinks about fertility and child rearing, and that's what, you know, your primal instincts tell you is attractive. But with a male cleavage, it probably wouldn't be that deep. But like that thicket, that undergrowth in the wood, there would be that darkness and a feeling of there could be anything in there, right?
I guess you could...
The thrill of the unknown.
You could use
and
the hair also. Mm. Yeah. I mean, the hair could be... Also, you're doing it to strike fear. I feel like until the last moment, it didn't sound like you were talking about fear. It sounded like you were just saying that, and this is maybe where I jumped to, is that you could use the hair essentially as for like visual illusion type things. You could use a fade, you know, on the outside, mm-hmm. and then allowing that to kind of create the illusion of a larger breast.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know,
and then creating that urge in people, which is possibly, you know, to see a large cleavage triggers some instinctual thing of like, I need to impregnate.
Yes.
I need to impregnate that. And it's so that men can get to have that feeling of wanting to be impregnated. I'm sure a feeling that women enjoy so much.
That they yearn for. But I think that's exactly right. That if we could find a way for men to actually... And this could be a good angle for the men's rights people, maybe, or
a
the
good
sort
satire.
Of the manosphere. They could be working this and saying that actually
the manosphere
men...
would be a great name for a male boob.
Indeed, but they're saying that because of this is why men have hair there. It's so that they can create this deeper cleavage, and actually, men are better at. That's another thing that men are better at. than women is
guys are better at having cleavage. Big boobs
well of making people think that's why we have that the alpha male in any pack of gorillas or whatever, that's why he has that, and he triggers those feelings of fertility.
Yeah. Now this is something I've been thinking about when you as you mentioned alpha males, is something that seems to be missing from alpha male dialogue, right? Mm. Is that, and apologies if I've mentioned this before, but the alpha male, right? Like, okay, so he's supposed to be the most powerful man of the group, male of the group, but he's also there to protect everybody, right?
Mm.
In the group. Right?
Not so to, like, not to sort of threaten them and intimidate them.
Yeah, he's not just like supposed to be the biggest, the toughest, and then just reap the benefits. It's like the reason why the rest of the group doesn't just kill you together, I assume, like, you know, is that it's because they know that you're there to sort of lead and then protect everybody. Like,
and
I get that you get
extent,
to push out maybe one other male. Sorry.
Yeah. To a certain extent, educate and, you know.
Mm. Keep everybody in line so that there's harmony and things are going pretty good. You have a functioning community. It's not so that you just like get to like it's not a dictatorship as far as I assume.
Or not like if it is it's supposed to be a benevolent one, right? It's supposed to be for a positive outcome for all of those in the group, and not just sort of generally horrible.
Yeah, it's
he's
not just like
the alpha male in a gorilla pack is not the most horrible gorilla that nobody nobody in their right minds would want to have anything to do with.
Who gives bad advice to other guys about how they should be and treat people and things like that, and make YouTube videos. Yeah. I wonder what about like the alpha male ant?
Oh yeah, okay, go on.
No, but just because, you know, like that's because I guess if the alpha male idea is a concept that does exist, then it must still kind of exist in a in a matriarchal society such as the ant colony
of the common ant gods.
And so then you would be the alpha male, but you would also be like, yeah, but obviously I can't get anything done due to the bureaucracy, or you know, whatever the situation, the system doesn't really allow, like, you know, you get to push other ants around, but in the end you I don't know which ones would be, there's the worker ants, and then there's the sort of the soldier ants.
Yeah, I think those might all be females.
Are they all?
I have a feeling. Well, I know that in a bee colony, the drones do literally nothing other than impregnate the queen.
Yeah, right. Right. Okay.
And they don't contribute in any other way to the society. And I don't know if it's the same with ants, but I think it might be. I think.
Oh.
That.
By the way, I got a book for Hux that from the library the other day in French, and we read it, and it's about this ant that's like young and watching this its ant colony that it's going to grow into being a part of, you know, walk by, and it was impressed by the line of these ants that go out and get food and stuff and bring back food, and it was like, oh, I can't wait to be part of this line. And then it kind of goes and it like meets like essentially the recruiters that are like, and it tells them that, and it goes, oh no, but look at the size of your head. And it's like looking at the size of their head, and it's like, no, and look at the size of your pincers or whatever. And it's like, no, you're not going to be one of these ants that goes and gets stuff. You're going to be a soldier ant, right?
Okay.
And then so he goes, oh, okay, well, you're going to be a soldier ant. And then he goes, okay, well, I guess I'll be that. And then they show him how it's going to be like out here defending, and it shows him how like that. And then they give it a uniform, which is like just like an actual military uniform. And then they're like, okay. And then there's like this moment where they're all kind of like parading, like, you know, they're like marching in a parade and things like that. And then a war starts, and then it shows like all these kind of like bombs landing on the ants thing. And it then shows actual soldiers kind of like running in both directions. And then the last page of this picture book is just like a concrete memorial thing. And it has like the ant's name in the list.
Yeah, wow.
Okay. It just happens really quick, and you go,
yeah.
I guess it was just a joke, you know, or was it, you know, either a joke or a very serious kids book, but it was took me by surprise.
I mean, it doesn't feel like a joke to me. It doesn't feel like something that'll really get the kids slapping their thighs.
No, but I mean, it's so poignant, so on the nose that it's like, it does make me laugh.
What did Huxley think?
Well, I mean, he doesn't get it. He doesn't know. I'm not going to lie. He's three, and I'm a bit slow to tell him about war.
So what's happened here? Right, is that the ant, remember the cute little ant from the beginning, he has died in a futile war. He had no power over his life. Yeah, wow.
And
I mean, it wasn't where I was expecting that to go. I mean, I wasn't sure where I was expecting it to go, but I thought the comment might be more about individuality or something like that, or the, you know, the need to express yourself, which I guess he did in a way by dying.
He did, yeah. Well, so like it's like making a kid's book like this, you know. It's about a kid who wants to be a fireman, right? And he says, "I want to be a fireman," and then he, you know, grows up and he kind of like, you know, wears the outfits when he's a kid and stuff like that. He's got, you know, he loves putting things out, and then He grows up and he finds out about how you become a fireman. He finds out that there's all these like physical tests and stuff like that. And he trains really hard to do it. And then he goes and does the test and he fails. And so then he's like, oh, okay. So then he goes and he like tries really hard again. And he meets a girl and he gets pregnant. And he gets her pregnant and they have a kid. And so, and then their bills start building up. And so he starts working in the supermarket doing night fill.
Yep.
And then he can't, you know, then he just has to keep doing that. And then he never becomes a fireman.
Yeah, but I feel like he probably also needs to get crushed to death by like a can of, like a crate of pineapple chunks that fall off a high shelf.
Yeah, due to or bad at least really like dent, health and safety. Dent his skull in a kind of like corner of a can kind of way.
Yeah.
And then he's in hospital and he's talking to his kid and he's got this dent in his forehead. And his kid is wearing like a fireman's outfit. I'm going to be a fireman.
No.
Like daddy, and he says like, is it the dad, you know, and the mom says, daddy's going to be a fireman one day, and he's like, yeah, and then maybe he passes away, I guess.
Yeah, I think he probably needs to die, and then, but there wouldn't even be a memorial in this case because we're making an even more poignant statement.
Yeah,
that but, you know, there are those who are sacrificed for the. structures of our society and to perpetuate the unseen empire, which is that of commercialism and capitalism. And when those people die, we don't even put up a fucking
The mother puts up a photo. Wall. She puts up a photo on the mantelpiece.
Yeah, okay, good.
But it's a photo of him with the dent in his forehead. Because she just didn't have another photo. Of just him. Oh, I should get a photo of you before you die, I suppose.
Yeah. But then he's got the dent. He's got the big dent in the head. She doesn't want to take a photo of him just with the dent in the head. So they try and fill the dent in with other stuff.
Yeah, with a bit of putty.
And with putty or maybe by using it like a fruit bowl. And ironically, they use it to put little pieces of pineapple in there. The very thing.
Yes.
Stove in his skull.
Well, you don't want to let the can go to waste. They can't sell it after it's got blood on it. They said you can have this now.
That would be an interesting. This would be, you know, how in Australia we have these supermarkets, NQR, the not quite right supermarket, which is where you can go and you can buy products that are like discontinued lines or something like that. Of
things like cheaper by miles, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know about that one. But NQR, you go, maybe there are things that are getting a bit close to their expiry date, basically things they couldn't sell in the regular supermarkets. Yeah. But then that's not quite right, but then there should be another supermarket, a smaller, darker supermarket, called quite fucked up or fully messed up.
Completely off.
Completely off. Wrong. Just plain wrong. This one's called not quite right. This one's just
don't
plain
shop
wrong.
Here.
Yeah. And they only sell products that have killed before. They have been we sell the crates, we sell the things that have been involved in workplace accidents. Some of them still have blood on them. And these have taken lives. That's why the prices are so low. It's very affordable.
This is like the police auctions.
Yes.
But it's the food part of the police auctions. You know, it's not like cars that have been stolen or whatever. Like, these are like everyday items that have accidentally killed people.
But I mean, police food auctions, like the food that has been caught up in criminal cases, would be very interesting. Like, often you'll see something where, like, turns out that they were trying to import kilos and kilos of cocaine inside, you know, cans of like coconut milk, right?
Yeah.
And I would be like, sure, that cocaine needs to be destroyed, but what happens to that coconut milk?
Exactly.
It feels like it's a waste to just throw that down the drain.
I mean, to think that there's, all these Thai curries that are going to go uncoconutted.
Exactly. And, you know, maybe a little bit of cocaine will have leached into the coconut milk. That could be the best curry you ever snorted.
Cocaine nut.
very good. Anyway, I think
police food auctions has been definitely been written down.
Could be something.
Andy, what if I was to tell you that we had a listener? How would you feel about that?
I'd be shocked, but also pleased. It would be a very pleasant.
Well, wait. Let me tell you whether or not this is a true thing.
Okay.
It's true. It's true.
I'm pleasantly and shocked.
This listener's name is Dominic Stevenson.
Dominic Stevenson.
And listener Dominic Stevenson has sent in three words from a listener. And that listener is Dominic Stevenson. And the three words that they've sent in, I would love if you could try to guess what they are.
Okay, the first word that Dominic Stevenson has sent in is... hang on.
Poetry.
Wait. It's doorway. Doorway.
Did you say doorway or galway?
I said doorway.
Doorway? Okay. It's engineering.
Okay. Wow. I mean, there's a connection there. Doorway. Sorry. Engineering. engineering. Okay. Engineering. Farewell. Second word, farewell.
Oh, I love that guess. Even though, Andy, it is so way off that I'm disappointed in you. I actually enjoyed hearing farewell there. But no, the word is bye. B-Y.
Engineering by... Is it the third word? Committee? I mean, that seems...
Andy, the third word is taste.
Engineering by taste. Wow. Yes. Yeah, okay.
So you can picture it, you know, your chief engineer walks in and he says, we got a new... we won a new tender.
Mm-hmm.
For a, you know, a new underground tunnel under the river. And so I want you to go down to the foreshore and, just stick your tongue into the sand.
Start licking.
And tell me, What your taste buds say that we should do for this project?
Well, my first thought there, Alistair, is that like with Neuralink, with all these, as soon as you get a chip in your brain, the next step is going to be getting accessories and finding ways in which you can enhance other parts of your body to take full advantage of that, of what that chip gives you. And I think it makes sense that the tongue, being such a sensitive and flexible organ, for people in the engineering profession, it would make sense to have that tongue augmented with various probes and sensors.
Lasers?
That will allow them to do, you know, soil analysis, geotechnical probing, that kind of thing, using just their tongue. So I don't think it's almost not barely fiction at this point to picture a team of engineers in there, their hard hats and high vis vests,
one engineer holding the other, another engineer by the legs.
And
he walks him along. He dips his tongue in, and he just walks him along,
walks him
sort
along
of wheelbarrow
as he licks
style.
The surface of the. Again, the fact that it's the foreshore is probably my favorite bit of this, Alistair. By the way, well done to you, because I am picturing an industrialized docks type area where there is a lot of, you know, runoff, and there's all sorts of shit on the ground. The ground is wet and slimy, and the engineer is being pushed along with their tongue dragging through this.
I think
film
once you get into the water
and
they're
chemical
like
slick
tongue in silt.
It's a beautiful idea.
It's a beautiful image. I mean, we're just taking directly from Dominic. Dominic essentially, you know, encoded all of this. You know, barely adding anything.
Again, we're barely adding anything, and it's barely fiction. One would say we've done and said nothing at all, almost. We're practically describing reality. But I think it's interesting you say that, Alistair, that it was all encoded in there, because when I heard those words, my first, I didn't interpret taste in that way. I interpreted it as sort of preference, as a sort of a, you know, an, almost an aesthetic kind of a thing, like an engineering where the engineering is done not so much mathematically as it is done on a personal preference, right? So you could go to various different engineers and you can go to this engineer. Oh, they love to use very, very thin columns and very thin wires for all their engineering, you know, and you're not really, at no point does anyone really talk about the structural suitability of these kinds of things. It's just around the feel and what they make the engineers feel, and the engineers are very emotionally connected to their work.
Yeah.
You know, they don't care about the size of the girders that you're using for your skyscraper, but they insist that they all be bright yellow. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. I love that kind of stuff. It occurred to me just then that when I was thinking about it, because every building, all the systems that are run through a building, through piped means.
The building services.
Yes, the building services. Every building must in some way be, at least, has the potential to be an organ. And by this I mean like a musical organ.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Because they would have lots of pipes of different length that you could pump air or fluid through and play.
Yes.
And it just feels like it should be a part of the, you know, maybe the building code that an organ should be placed at some kind of like, you know, pipe terminal.
I've always said this, Alistair. If you got a pipe, you got a flute. That's my saying.
I know you've been saying this, and in many ways, the whole sewerage system has the potential to be like a city-sized pipe organ.
Oh, it's really good. I'm trying mentally to combine the word effluent and the word flautist. And I'm wondering
effluentist.
If you could...
Effluentist.
Effluentist, I think.
Effluentist.
you have all the manhole covers throughout the city. Those are just those little key things, aren't they? And if you could get someone of the caliber of Louis Armstrong to go down to where all this sewage runs off into the bay, and you put a little trumpet mouthpiece on that opening, and get Louis to blow into it. And then throughout the city, you have musicians standing by every manhole, opening and closing them. And you play the city. You play the whole city like a trumpet or a saxophone.
A saxophone.
Yes.
A saxophone. It's really good. I like that pronunciation of saxophone. That's what you were trying to pronounce, right?
No, no.
Jonathan.
Mm.
Wait, so Jonathan and Jonathan. Which one do you say? Jonathan.
Depends on who I'm
Jonathanist.
Talking to.
This is somebody who plies Jonathan. I've been plied. You know, this is like Jonathan comes to you. He says, you know that girl I introduced you to? She plied me.
Okay. And it turns out what
she did. And then you say to him, he's really distraught. You say to him, that makes her a Jonathanist.
Write it down. I mean,
oh my God.
How do you feel about the idea of a Louis Armstrong type or maybe a Dizzy Gillespie taking the tip, the mouthpiece off their brass instrument of choice, placing it into your butthole and blowing into it, and then using your various bodily orifices to
It feels like something people would pay a great deal to do, like the Guggenheim or something like that in front of a crowd of people. You'd like open your mouth.
Yeah. Yeah.
And exactly. Everybody would be very serious about it.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, I would love that.
Great.
Famous.
I mean, you know, the way the intestine curls around, it's basically one of those, euphonium or something like that, a tuba. The intestinal tuba.
And people, you know, have already sort of put the idea in our head by referring to the analingus whilst jerking off a penis as the rusty trombone.
Of course. Yes.
You know.
I mean, the clues were all there. God has been placing these clues like he wants us to do. I mean,
people would say this in jest for years.
I mean, but the medical term entubated, which they use to mean when you've put a tube down somebody's throat to help them to breathe, more like a word you would use to say that you were actually turning a man into a tuba by placing a tuba's mouthpiece in his...
Yeah, intubated.
Mm.
Oh, sorry, that's pronounced intubated. It's for tuba. Sorry, it's a synonym of intubated. And we apologize for making you think that we were just going to put a tube down your throat. No, we're going to be putting a big tuba mouthpiece in your anal passage. It's a homophone.
Mm. Oh, the homophone, Alistair. Playing a man like a musical instrument. Homophone.
Yeah. Oh, that's perfect, isn't it?
It is perfect.
Yeah, it's a homo sapien phone.
Playing the homophone.
Wow, that is perfect. It just literally means the human phone. Andy, we can't go any further and better than this, so we have to wrap it. I'm going to take us through the sketch ideas.
We've reached very much the clitoris of the Everest that is this concept.
Well, that's idea two. Discover Everest is the clitoris of the world and that the climate will be fixed if we can just get it to climax.
Mm.
It'll cool down, you know, once we get through the world's orgasm. And then we have, first idea was topical erotic fan fiction.
Very sexy episode.
A very sexy episode. It's so unlike us to talk about slightly filthy ideas. Then we have the lubricant that allows you to slip through the earth and walls and eventually yourself as well. We have the male cleavage for the sloppy gentleman. And something about, you know, for the men's rights guys who think that actually our hair allows us to be even better at having cleavage.
Mm.
We have the Never Quite Became a Fireman kids book about the guy who dies with the can who lands on his forehead. We have the police food auctions, which is, you know, all the food that gets confiscated from various raids. We have the engineer with the tongue and soil being wheelbarrow walked along the foreshore.
Mm.
Because he's doing some engineering by taste. We have a sewer system that has the potential to be a pipe organ. We have the Jonathanist. man called Jonathan who was played by his wife. And somebody makes a stupid comment and takes away from the seriousness of the moment. And we have the famous jazz trumpeters putting tuba mouthpieces in your butt. And
there we go. Playing you like a homophone.
Yes, like a homophone. So I guess that's bit. 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 Bit.
Thank you so much for listening to Two in the Think Tank.
Think Tank. I'm Andy, and I'm Alistair. Judge me, Tony Virgil.
My friend Sam recently, we were sharing your French stand-up piece, and he wrote your name as Alistair Tremblay, etc.
That's very good. That's very good.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot.
It's so funny to quit so deep in.
I know, but you're like, you know, you get it.
Yeah, you know, I can't possibly.
And so on.
Yeah, no, that's really good. If anybody else has any great spins on my name, I would love to hear them. So send them in to inthethinktank@gmail.com. Mm. And, you know, and if, you know, you need us to be on your podcast or something like that, Andy doesn't have any time, but I'm, you know, I could probably squeeze it in.
I'm going to try and make some time to be on Matt Stewart's Who Knew It With Matt Stewart podcast soon.
You don't know what a luxury it is to live in Melbourne and be able to do that podcast.
Mm. It's one of the reasons we're the world's most livable city.
Exactly. And congratulations again. You've done it and you continue to do it. You know, we'd lost it for a year, but then Matt started the podcast.
We got it back.
And we got it back. And to the listeners,
we love
you. I don't know if you knew that.
Bye.
See you.